Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. I wanted to tell you first, if you've been listening to my show, you'll hear me repeat this, but I want to make you aware that I just released my memoir. It's called Cliff Edge Road. It's one word, Cliff Edge. And this is a rewrite because I had released my memoir back in 2009. But as I looked at it over the years, I was not really happy with it because I was very, I held back. I didn't really tell the truth about so many things. And I also was not a very good writer. So in the years that have followed the publication of that book, I've decided to do a rewrite, and this book is very different. So the characters just jump off the page to you, but it's a real story, and it's very interesting. So check it out on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, Cliff Edge Road, the memoir. Now, I'm going to ask you, have you ever heard about Zentangling? Zentangling. This is a self-help drawing therapy practice to enhance relaxation and focus. Today's special guest, certified Zentangle teacher Brian Crimmins, says that just as in meditation we focus on the breath, in Zentangle we create by focusing our attention on one pen stroke at a time. There is an element of ceremony to the Zentangle method that causes us to settle in, become present, express gratitude for our fine materials, establish the spaces in which we will place our tangle patterns, draw shade with graphite and tortillon, and lastly, take a moment to appreciate our designs. Brian Crimmins is an artist, writer, and certified Zentangle teacher. On the heels of graduating with a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing from University of Central Florida in 2014, he discovered Zentangle through a class offered at a local art store. Since becoming a CZT in 2016, Brian has taught at conferences, museums, cafes, tea houses, and in private homes. And there's so much more to learn about Brian, so I'm going to get started and bring him on so you can meet him and hear all about it. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Randy. Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. So I have a copy of your Zentangle Dingbats book, and
yes.
It is really very cool. You know, it teaches you exactly how to do this. And to my listeners, go take a look at this. You know, check it out on Amazon. It's very interesting. So let's start with how you got into this, because this is something that many of us are not aware of. So what is your story?
Yeah, so I, you mentioned much of it in terms of how I discovered Zentangle. It was after graduate school. I had a lot of time on my hands, or I felt like I did, and was looking for something to try. And I took a class at a local art store, and things just exploded after that. I started meeting people. There's a very, very active community that comes with Zentangle. It's a community that's very giving and very very inspiring and very willing to teach and help. And so that's what I discovered through this process. So I met another teacher, my friend Cindy Levine, who's fantastic, and she inspired me to become a teacher, and it all kind of unfolded. So this past year, when in May, I had a chance to get my after some previous proposal work and what have you, and also with the assistance of Joanne Fink, who is also a very accomplished artist who helped me get connected with Fox Chapel, I found out in May that I was getting this contract, which was just phenomenal news. This has been, to write a book was something that I had been wanting to do since I was 10. And at about the same time, right after I signed the contract, we learned that my mother had stage 4 liver cancer. And so she started going through treatments through the summer. I was going back and forth between Florida and California to take care of my family and help them with everything that was going on. And what I found, and I didn't realize this until the summer was over, we went into fall, and Mom eventually did pass away in November, that Zentangle really does what it says it will do. It is a practice and a process that keeps us from veering from the present. It brings us right back to the moment. It calms and quiets the mind and obsessive thoughts. And because I had so much of it, I had to do over the summer to create all of the drawings and everything for my book. It was almost, I call it contractual mindfulness, because I had a book contract, so I knew it had to get done. And despite everything else that was going on, but it was the gift to me in that I had to make sure throughout that whole season of my life that I was taking the time to draw and to create, you know, images for my book. And I think that's what really helped me kind of navigate through such a difficult season. So that, and the book was written and created between May and November of last year, and it came out in June of this year. So it's been a really exciting project. It's been a really wonderful project. And like I said, the Zentangle community and the artist community that I'm a part of have really just been very kind and been very supportive in, you know, taking this book in, enjoying it, finding inspiration from it. And that's my hope for anyone who picks it up.
That's a really good story. Would you consider this art therapy?
I think it could. I mean, I think there are certain, you know, requirements or legalities around art therapy, but I think in general it has a therapeutic, I'm not sure of the criteria of what makes something art therapy, I would definitely say that there is something therapeutic about this process for sure.
Okay. Now, when you look at the book, and I know you say this, some people look at it and think it's doodling. And so what is the difference between doodling and Zentangle?
That's an excellent question. It's one that I think comes up in just about every Zentangle class that I teach. When we sit down to doodle, And I have this image of myself kind of on the phone, and just kind of the pen is just randomly going. It may be drawing, you know, circles, or it may be drawing flowers, or just whatever might come to mind. And I don't have a plan. It's just kind of what's going out onto the paper while I'm talking on the phone or listening to something or what have you. The difference with Zentangle is that Zentangle is an intentional process. We are using specific patterns, tangle patterns, that are made up of, you know, basically dots, lines, simple curves, and orbs. And we sit down with the intent of, okay, I'm going to fill this particular space with this pattern. And it's a much more intentional, thoughtful, and meditative process versus simply kind of trying to fill something with a random kind of approach to it, which that randomness would be more of the doodling piece. The intentionality of it would be more related to Zentangle.
Okay. So it's a very mindful practice. It's not just random.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a ceremony, and you mentioned some of the steps in my intro as well, that there's a kind of ceremony that we teach as part of a Zentangle class that I also touch on in the book, that kind of walks us through step by step, you know, to follow from the moment that we pick up our supplies to the moment we kind of stand back and appreciate what we've created at the end. There are steps along the way, a ceremony that allows us to go through the process.
So I know that you mentioned who created this, but let's just talk about that a little bit. Oh, Rick Roberts and Maria Thomas. They founded it as a meditative art method. Do you know what their background was and where this came from?
So Maria was, from what I recall, Maria was an artist and a calligrapher, very accomplished. Rick was working, I believe, in printing, but he was also a musician. And they happened to, Rick came into the dining room and saw Maria doing this design, and it was a repetitive design, but it was evolving in a very beautiful way. And they started to look at what she was doing and the experience that she was having. So it wasn't just focused on the outcome of the drawing. It was also on how it felt for her. She was able to kind of go into a meditative state. Time kind of stood still, and she was able to really go into the present moment while she was doing this repetitive drawing. And it was at that moment that they began developing this concept of Zentangle. And now they've become ambassadors of this process and have trained teachers around the world doing workshops. It's become quite a global phenomenon.
That's so interesting. So there's specific supplies that you have to use, and this is done on a 3.5 inch square tile, but it's not a tile. It's actually made of cotton paper. So what other supplies? Well, you can start with that. You can start with all the supplies. Let's tell us how this works.
Sure. Yeah. So one of the many great things about Zentangle is that it doesn't require a lot of supplies. You know, there are some art forms that when you say, okay, I'm going to take a class, and, you know, $300 later, and all these supplies that you have that you might not use again if you don't enjoy the class, it's really, you know, that's an investment. Whereas with Zentangle, all that's required are a Pigma Micron 01 pen, a graphite pencil, a shading stump or a tortillon, and the paper. And the focus that Rick and Maria had when they made these, because there are so few supplies, they really wanted to focus on the highest level of quality. And so they tested a lot of different pens, and they landed on the Pigma Micron by Sakura. They landed on general pencils to create the graphite pencils, and they landed on Fabriano, which is an Italian company that makes this very, very nice cotton paper that makes the actual, what we call tiles, that you mentioned that we draw on. And that's really all that's required in terms of supplies, which is also nice because it makes it mobile. It makes it, you don't need a lot of setup or extra equipment or anything like that. It's something you can throw into your bag or your backpack or your purse and take it on the road with you, do it on your lunch break. It's really an easy, mobile, accessible art form.
So where do we get these cotton tiles, these cotton paper tiles? Do we order them from this company, from the Zentangle? Well, you tell me. Where do we get
them? Yeah, so if you go to Zentangle.com, you can order the authorized Zentangle supplies directly from Zentangle headquarters. There are also, you can find the Pigma Micron pens, you can find graphite pencils and shading stumps at any art supply store. And there are a lot of other, artist tiles, they call them, that are sold in stores, which are approximately the same size, that are also good to practice on. But to get the full Zentangle experience, you can order any of those supplies from Zentangle.com.
Okay. So what is the purpose of fine cotton paper? What does that do?
What does that do? It makes for and one of the steps in the ceremony I mentioned earlier is really taking a moment to appreciate our materials and the way that they serve us in allowing us to express ourselves artistically. And so when we sit down with, when you sit down with just kind of a piece of copy paper, that's one kind of experience you might have. But when you sit down with a square of really fine paper, you know that it's, traveled far from I'm in Florida, from Italy, that's far, to get here. It's a nice feeling. We're using with the pen, it's archival level ink. So using that on this paper, the connection between the paper and the pen and then the graphite to create the shading and the depth in the design, Rick and Maria have worked very diligently to make sure all of that works together in the most optimal way. And I can attest to the fact that it really does.
Do you have to have art talent in order to do this?
Absolutely not. And that's another thing that I really enjoy as a certified Zentangle teacher is at the beginning of a class, someone coming in and saying, oh, I'm not an artist or I'm not creative. And then they spend a couple of hours with me and their friends in a class, and they have suddenly broken out of that limiting belief. So many people have had these experiences where, in third grade, a teacher said, you draw the house wrong or this tree doesn't look right, and they never pick up a pencil again. They're scarred in terms of, feeling like they could ever be creative. And we all have that creative spark within us. It's finding the right channel and the right avenue for us to express that. And so that's what I love about Zentangle, because it doesn't require any previous artistic experience. We're really all of the patterns that align with the method only require dots, lines, simple curves, S curves, and orbs. Like those are the shapes. So if you can do those five shapes, and we don't even call them circles, we call them orbs, because drawing a circle has an expectation that it be very symmetrical and very perfectly round. Whereas an orb can just be kind of round-ish, we don't put off any kind of expectation there. So as long as you can do those fundamental elements, you can create using any of the Zentangle patterns.
Yeah, and the ones that you've done in the book are really beautiful, and I love the way that you shade. Now, shading is something, I was an art major in college. Shading is something that, you learn, and there's a specific way to do it. You can't be too heavy on the pen. You have to know where to shade. That sounds like a upper level kind of aspect to it. But I'm getting the feeling that it's not when you're doing Zentangle. So do you teach shading?
Yes, shading is part of the basic introductory course to Zentangle, and we don't take a scientific approach to it. Because Zentangle is all non-representational, it's all abstract. It's it's more about using the shading to create depth and sometimes even optical illusion. When we sit down to draw something, and let's say we're drawing the tree outside the window, we have an expectation when we're done that what will be on the paper will look like what I see out the window. And then that can create disappointment. It can create attachment to the expectation. There are a lot of things that can happen. So that's another great benefit of the Zentangle method, is that it's non-representational. It's all abstract. And so by using these abstract designs and then just laying down a little bit of graphite on certain edges or in certain places in the design, it really completely changes the look of the Zentangle drawing. So we don't take we could get very scientific about, well, the light's coming from this direction and, you know, how do we adjust it and all that kind of thing. But I think in our case, it's really more about where in the design do we want to draw attention to? How do we want to make something look like it's behind something else? We can use shading and graphite in that way, and that's pretty much where it stands. So, but we do cover that typically in our introductory classes, because that's kind of the finale after you've done your drawing, to see the difference that a little bit of shading can really make.
It really does. I mean, it really does change the look of the picture. So some of these are real, I mean, well, actually all of them are real works of art, and we may want to display them. So that's a very small canvas, basically, to do the work on. Mm-hmm. Are we restricted to that size for Zentangling?
Absolutely not. So when you go out of the realm of the 3.5-inch square inch tiles, you create something we call Zentangle Inspired Art, or ZIA. And that's really taking this method, using these patterns and this process and this ceremony, and putting it on anything that you can imagine. So you can go on larger paper. On social media, I've seen people who have Zentangled on a wall and have done a room in their house. I've seen, furniture done with a Zentangle design. You can then begin to expand out from the traditional method, which is as we've been talking about it, and take it in whichever direction you want. You can do it on ornaments. You can do it on holiday items. You can do it in a wide variety of places, which is really, I think, part of what I address in the book, is the way that you can use Zentangle to add decoration and ornamentation to a lot of different things.
Yeah, I'm looking kind of in the middle of the book where you show envelopes and how beautiful you can make, your envelopes, and you can make greeting cards and bookmarks and all kinds of things that are beautiful. They make beautiful gifts. So, it's very cool, very cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well, what else did you want to tell us about this? Is there any, let's see, I'm looking through the book.
Yeah, well, I think in the book is really, there's three main parts to the book. And I think one thing I want to make sure people know is that it's first, if you've never Zentangled, if you've never heard of it or you've never done any of it, the first few pages of the book are a quick tutorial on the fundamental steps of the method. So if you've never heard of Zentangle and you've never done it, the book is still useful. One of the things that Fox Chapel, my editor at Fox Chapel, was interested in with this book is that there are a lot of books on the market about how to do the fundamental Zentangle method and, in various collections of patterns and so forth. But there's a need and a desire to have additional books that are more focused on how do you apply them, kind of what you were mentioning, Randy, about, once I've done kind of the original traditional method on the tile, where can I take it? Where can I go with this? And so that's where this concept of Zentangle dingbats came into play. So dingbats, spelled D-I-N-G-B-A-T-S, are printer's ornaments that printers have used over the ages to add flourish, decoration, and ornamentation to books. So particularly if you look at older books, but even newer ones, where you see kind of these flourishes or these little frames around headers or titles or chapter sections or what have you, those the term that printers used was called dingbat. And so a couple of years ago, Rick and Maria came out with this video that introduced this concept of dingbat spelled with a Z for Zentangle. And they were kind enough to give me permission to use that term to create this book. And so the next part of the book, once you get through this initial grounding in the method, so again, great reminder if you're experienced at it and a great introduction if you've never done it, is really the bulk of the book is called The Anatomy of Dingbat. And I've really taken a chance to I went back through all of those early sketches I did right after I had heard about this concept from Rick and Maria, and broke it down into all the different components and really try to give the artist who's reading this book the chance to understand the different components of creating these dingbats and the wide variety that you can take it. You can take it very framed and very specific, and you can use that design, as you mentioned, on envelopes. You can use them on gift cards. You can use them on you can make a zine using your dingbats. You can create all these different projects. You can do, there's a lot of holiday gatherings coming up. You can create, use dingbats and Zentangle on name cards and cards to describe food on the buffet. So there are a lot of really great ways that you can just add a little bit of a decoration using this concept of Zentangle dingbats to incorporate in. And then after the anatomy, you have a whole section of projects. So like I said, you've got the zine, you've got the envelopes, you've got something called a weathergram, which is a kind of a bookmark-sized tag that you create using very natural materials. You do your Zentangle design on it, and usually sometimes they put an inspirational statement on it, and you leave that out in nature. You hang it on a shrub in a park or on a bench or what have you, and it just kind of dissolves as the weather takes it. But it's a nice little surprise for a passerby to see a little piece of art hanging in their park or in their yard or what have you. So those projects are described here as well. And then the book concludes with a tangled directory and what we call step outs. So step outs are the patterns, the different steps it takes to create a pattern. And so the last part of the book is a collection of all the different tangle patterns that you'll see used throughout the book. So you'll know what they're called, because when it comes time to look up a pattern, it's important to know the name of that pattern. And so those are listed in the back. So I love the way this came together, because I think it's a valuable tool for someone who is just coming into the Zentangle space and really learning for the first time. And it's also something that I've seen and gotten a lot of great feedback from other certified Zentangle teachers who are now using it as inspiration for teaching classes on the subject in their own communities. So it's been a really great journey, and I'm very grateful for all that.
Yeah, I'm amazed as I'm going through this book, all the lingo that's been developed around this this particular art form, and it's amazing. It really is. I mean, this is so far developed. When was this founded? I probably said it, but let me look at the paper. Let's see. Yeah, when did they start this? What year was this?
Let me see here. I want to say it was in the. It was in 2003.
Okay. All right.
It was in 2003 when Rick found Maria in her studio making that initial pattern design that was the impetus for Zentangle. Mm.
Okay. Very cool. So you live in Florida, and what part of Florida are you in?
I'm in Central Florida, the Orlando area.
Okay. All right, you went to school there at UCF. Yeah, my son
graduated
from there as well.
There, yeah.
Yeah, I love that school.
Awesome.
Yeah, my son spent 5 years there. And a lot of people stay in the Orlando area after graduating from that school. Is that what kept you there?
I grew up in California, and I came out here after I got my bachelor's degree in 1994. And so going back to get my MFA at UCF was something that I started when I was 41. So it was kind of a later career thing that it was something I had always wanted to do, and it was the right time for me to do it. So, and it was great. I mean, there is such a, as this community grows in the Central Florida region, there's so many, the art scene, the literary scene, all of those components are really, really expanding and really growing. And it's nice to see that. Those are important elements of a strong community, and it's great to see people using that skill in so many ways. The Orlando Museum of Art, which is here in town, puts on a monthly event called First Thursday, which is a community curated art event. There's usually a theme for each event, and artists are invited to submit, and then they're selected to display, and then you can also sell and purchase art at this event as well. It's a great event. They have live music and food and beverage and what have you. But last May, I had the chance to, I think it was April or May, had a chance to display one of my Zentangle-inspired art pieces at that event. The theme was mindfulness and healing, and this seemed like a perfect fit for Zentangle. So it was a great chance not only to step out a little bit further as an artist, but it was also an opportunity to, you know, much like we're doing today, to introduce people to this practice and this method, and to, you know, understand like what exactly it is. So that's, you know, that's a nice thing about this area, is that those kinds of opportunities for artists to step out and to share and to talk about what they're doing are really becoming much more prevalent, which is encouraging.
I didn't even know that. I really didn't. So it's really an inspirational kind of area, artistic and all that. So you teach, excuse me, you teach these courses, these workshops, and how many days? Is it just a one-day workshop, or how long are they?
So typically a Zentangle, an introductory Zentangle class takes about 2 hours.
Okay.
And we cover, you know, everything from the materials to, you know, talking through the principles behind it, to doing some actual drawing and creating a tile. It depends on the size of the group. When I've taught smaller groups, we usually do two tiles, and that usually encompasses about eight different patterns that we try. And there are different, you know, types of patterns. Some are based on grids, some are based on kind of free-form lines. So we show different examples of the different types of patterns through that lesson. We go through shading, and then we take a moment at the end to not only admire our own work and kind of step back and appreciate what we have created, but going along the fact that they're all called tiles, we then create a class mosaic. So on a table, we will have everyone, all the students, come up and put their tiles on the table. And that's where I think this is really gets really, there's a magical element to this, because everyone has a chance to see what everyone has done. And I'm, as a teacher, I'm always fascinated by how I've given everyone the same instructions. I have demonstrated, everyone has seen my demonstration all at the same time. And yet when you see the mosaic of how each of the tiles is uniquely different, it really kind of celebrates the individual voice of each person that comes to the table. And, you know, and that's another thing when people say, you know, oh, I guess I am an artist, or I guess I can be creative. And that's such a gratifying element of teaching, is to see when someone kind of breaks through a limiting belief that in some cases they've been holding on to since childhood, to create something and to feel such a sense of accomplishment. And because you're working small in the traditional method, you know, you can spend 30 to 45 minutes on a tile and you have a completed piece of art right there. And those are, you know, they're great to kind of keep for your own reference, but they're really nice to, you know, slip inside of a greeting card or, you know, put a little frame around and send to someone for a thinking of you gift or, you know, something that might inspire someone. You can use Zentangle to decorate around a monogram, and you can do a little monogram frame for somebody. So, you know, they're I love it too, because it's very easy to create something beautiful and then use it to make other people feel special. And, you know, that's kind of the nice way you can use this art form to pay forward that space of gratitude and mindfulness to others.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking I spend a lot of time on my tablet. I have like a coloring program, you know, where you color and stuff. I mm-hmm. also have the jigsaw puzzle. So I spend a lot of time with my eyes on this electronic device. And this really gets you out of the electronic world and back to the real pen on paper kind of, you know, art and drawing and expression. So I really like that. When I was a child, I mean, I didn't have a lot of toys. We just didn't have a lot of toys back then. But I had blocks with different shapes, and I could sit there for hours and create different patterns. I loved doing that, you know. And then my kids laugh at me, but my parents would spill like of various dry beans on the table, and they have different colors, different mm-hmm. shapes, and everything like that. And then I would create designs out of that, and it made me a very creative person as a result of it. So I like this because this is just, you know, really grassroots kind of kind of creativity. I really like that. And you say that erasers are not allowed. So what happens if we make a mistake?
That's a great, yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's another great metaphor for life, that, you know, when we make a mistake in life, we can choose to learn from it, but we can't really erase it. And so when we're working in Zentangle, the little pencils that we give each student do not purposely have erasers. And that's because in Zentangle, we believe there's no such thing as a mistake. And so what that challenges you to do as you're working through it. So if I'm following a pattern and I'm going along and maybe my mind kind of goes somewhere else and I make, you know, I'm supposed to make four lines and I make five. Well, then I'm presented with a creative opportunity to learn how to incorporate that into my design rather than crossing it out or tearing it up or starting over, because we don't encourage that either. It's really about, okay, well, now that you did that, what are you going to do with it? How will you shift? Will you turn the tile? That's another technique that we teach, is, you know, to create a design that really kind of works its way around the tile. You can turn it and get the right angle for your hand to draw something that you exactly wanted to have. And so so in doing that, it allows us to figure out, okay, well, I made a mark that I wasn't intending to, but now I get to figure out what I'm going to do with that. And so, yes, that's a very important part. And people do have moments of anxiety when they see, well, where's the eraser to the pencil? Well, there are no erasers. And it really frees people up to, you know what, make a mistake. Make a mistake, and then we'll figure out what you can do with it when you get there. And it can be very liberating for them.
Yeah, I like how you compare this to life events, you know, life situations. But you're a life coach, aren't you?
I do. Yes, I am. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I like how you're, you know, how you're using these analogies to life situations. But it's true. Everything that you're saying is very true. And this is a great way to overcome our hang-ups that we have about,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
about yeah, who we are and what we do. And I like the fact that you cannot you know, you can't erase your mistakes. You just have to work with them. That's a very cool analogy. I like that. So
yeah.
You're teaching. So are there teachers pretty much in every state in the United States, and are there teachers in other countries?
Yes, and if anyone goes to the Zentangle.com website, they can search a directory by location to see who the nearest certified Zentangle teacher would be. So that's a great resource to find a Zentangle teacher. You can also check in with a local art store. They may usually, CZTs are connected with people at their art stores. So that's another great way to kind of look and see if classes are happening there. And then also, if people are interested in learning more about Dingbats, we do have an active Facebook group called Dynamic Dingbats with Zentangle. Again, that's Dynamic Dingbats with Zentangle.
And Dingbats is with a Z on the end, right?
Correct. Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dingbats with
okay.
a Z.
Okay.
And that's an active community of, we're almost at 2,000 people. And there are a lot of teachers in there, but there are a lot of people who just are looking for inspiration or who have picked up the book and want to keep the conversation going. And that's really what we do on that Facebook page. So, you can request to join, answer a couple of questions. And I'm the one that reviews all of the people who want to join. So I will let you in and you can join the conversations. That's another great way to kind of keep it going and to share what you've created when you create something new.
And you also do groups and conferences and things like that too. So if somebody wants to bring an interesting idea to their group, that would be a great way to do it or a great thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as I mentioned, the Zentangle community is a very active one. And every year there is a conference just for certified teachers called Tangle U. And a fantastic woman named Elaine Huffman puts it on, and she's awesome. And usually about 100 to 120 certified Zentangle teachers come together. It travels around the country, around the United States. And so this past spring it was in Asheville. Next year it'll be in Scottsdale. But it's a great chance for teachers to come together specifically and inspire each other. And I taught the last 2 years. Last year I taught Dingbats, and then I taught this year, and I'll be teaching in Scottsdale next year as well. So if you do get involved in the Zentangle community and you do become a teacher, there are also these other opportunities to pursue, not only for community, but for continued learning, for ideas on classes that you can then learn and take back to your communities and teach to your students where you live. So it depends on, you know, or you can simply keep those 3.5-inch tiles in your bag and keep drawing on your lunch break. It's whatever, you know, sparks you and what drives you, but there's a wide variety of things that one can get involved in when it comes to the Zentangle community, because it's, you know, far and wide.
Right. So do you sort of, when you're doing this, do you sort of get into like a meditative state? I know when I'm doing art or I create jewelry and things like that, I am so in it. I'm so in it at the time that nothing else around me matters, you know. I'm so involved in that. And also when I write, it's the same thing. So I guess that's kind of meditative as well. But this, you know, I can imagine how, you know, you get focused and you get really involved in this and go into this relaxed state. You know, is that really was this created about art, or was it created about for the practice of meditation and relaxation? Or do you know?
From what I understand,
maybe you don't know.
Yeah. I mean, from what Rick and Maria shared when we were in training and what they advocate, it's really more about the process and less about the outcome. And so, so I can't answer for them. But based on what they've shared, I would suspect that a strong motivator in the development of Zentangle was the mindfulness element.
Okay.
And I agree with you that, you know, when I sit down to tangle, I, you know, and you can make a moment of it, you know, brew some tea or a good cup of coffee and, you know, turn on a little bit of, you know, meditative music in the background. You can do as much of that environmental supplement that you want. Or you can simply sit outside in a park and do it there, whatever kind of sacred moment you want to create with that. But I do, you know, and it's great to do first thing in the morning, you know, as part of your journaling exercise. I love to journal, and I journal every morning when I wake up. So it's a great way to kind of add a couple of Zentangle dingbats into my journal as I'm starting to warm up and starting to think about what I want to write about that particular day. But yes, it is something that if I get into it and the pattern is very appealing to me, and I've just really kind of gotten into it and I'm taking it in different directions, it can become, much like you said, just very much a kind of go away and really get into my own space, and time kind of suspends at that point, which, you know, that's healthy. I think it's good to have those kind of moments to really just get back to yourself and kind of block out all of the distractions that we have that consume a lot of our time the rest of the day.
That's so true. I like that. So your book is Zentangle Dingbats with a Z on the end. Can we learn to do this entirely from your book?
Yes. I mean, I would always encourage people, if they want to take a Zentangle class, to find a local teacher and to, you know, become part of the local Zentangle community. But if you're someplace where you can't, or you want to supplement that, my book absolutely can do that. It's got fundamental instructions on how to Zentangle specifically just on its own. And then you can take those skills and learn how to create these dingbats, and then use them on a wide variety of projects, which I also show you how to do.
Okay. Great book. I mean, you put a lot of work into this book, I can see. There's
Thank
a lot
you
of
so
illustrations.
Much. Thank you.
And yeah. I mean, as someone who writes books, I know what goes into books. And when most of the book is photographs and images, that is a lot of work. So you've also got the writing, the content, the writing, but it's beautifully, beautifully designed. The book is beautifully designed.
Thank you.
I like it. I like it.
Thank
I appreciate
so
that. I really do.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Andy.
I just, like I said in the beginning, I just published another book, and yeah, so we put our love and heart and soul into these books. But yours
yeah.
really shows. Yours really shows. Anyway, where can we get Zentangle Dingbats?
I would say it's available on Amazon. It's available on BarnesandNoble.com. Those are usually the two places where most people are purchasing them. Fox Chapel is the publisher. But I would say for the quickest, probably Amazon or Barnes & Noble is your best bet.
Okay, awesome. Was there anything else you wanted to leave us with today?
No, I just, my wish for people, and this is what I've seen, and you mentioned it in terms of when you write a book, you put your heart and soul into it, and then it goes out into the world, and it's not really yours anymore. It kind of takes on a life of its own, and I have just been so grateful for the wonderful response that people have given to this book, that they're finding inspiration with it, and to all the listeners who haven't had a chance to see it yet or haven't picked up a copy, my hope is that they do, and that they find creativity, that they find inspiration, and that they find mindfulness and unique ways to incorporate art into their daily lives. So thank you so much for having me, Randy. This was really a wonderful, wonderful conversation. Thank you.
Yes, it was, Brian. Thank you. I really appreciate you being my guest today. Good luck with all. Good luck with the success of this book, and and hopefully I'll find some time to go check this out and take a class. It's all new to me. It's all new to me.
That's
anyway,
good. That's
have
good.
A, have
Thank
a wonderful
you.
Day. Enjoy your day.
Thank you so much, Randy. Take
Thank
care.
Thank you. Okay. Take care. Bye bye. So we are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. Randy, R-A-N-D-I, randyfine.com. I hope you will take the opportunity to check out my two books, Cliff Edge Road and Close Encounters of the Worst Kind. One is the memoir. The Cliff Edge Road is the memoir. And Close Encounters of the Worst Kind is a guide for narcissistic abuse survivors for their healing and recovery. Two excellent books, both available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's been great having you with me today. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.